Mr. Wilmot, Real 10. You were telling me about how, when you were supplying, as archivist, you were supplying this Russian party or troops in the village.
Yes, there were no troops, there weren't military. There were not military personnel, but there were Russian people. And they were collecting these DPs wherever they were, and they were bringing them to this village, and they were shipping them from this village out back up to Leningrad, presumably. I supplied them the same rations as I supplied the squadron. So there was 200, if they said it was 200, they got 200 rations. All the rations were delivered to the main house where they lived in, and they looked after them from there. I don't know what went on.
So you were supplying the whole camp, all the displaced persons as well?
Exactly, I supplied it to these people who came and who were in charge.
Now you said it wasn't a very pleasant experience. What was
nobody was happy about going back to Russia after Ghana. And there was no fraternisation at all. It was just a question of, I went in, we put the rations down there, and that was it, and off we went. But it was a miserable kind of a thing, and you didn't think these people were very well off at all. The only people who were winning were the ones in charge.
Now, what's the next thing that you remember of that period?
So in Brezhnev, another thing that happened to me in Brezhnev, I was sent on leave. I never had a day off all the time. And I was sent on the first leave party because I'd never been there.
Back to Scotland.
Back to Scotland. I had to go to Lübeck. No, I had to go to Flensburg to get the train. And I got on the train at Flensburg. No glass in the windows, you know. But I got on the train. By this time, of course, I was an RPF arrest. I was warrant officer class 2. And I was well treated. And I got the train straight back to Holland. And I got on first because we were pickups all the way down. And we train left Flensburg, and went all the way back to the Hook of Holland, where I got on a ship to come back to Britain and home. And that was my first leave.
And when was that?
Well, I don't remember.
That's all right, right? Yeah.
I mean, it was after we got bedded down in Brezhnev. We weren't allowed to fraternise, but there was one thing happened which broke the fraternisation. We went to Flensburg. We went to Flensburg for concerts. There was a Flensburg Philharmonic concert party used to do it, and that was the first time I had a thick sax vocal, and we just went there every week and listened to them. They were lovely. So fraternisation must have been easing off by then.
There was more of it.
Yeah.
What's the next thing you remember then?
Then it was decided that the first regiment were going to the Far East, and the first regiment were going to demob their senior personnel back to me in Brezhnev, and we were to start sending up groups and groups and groups of younger second liners up to the first line. Now that was happening. It was quite a big operation. I was getting back loads of old soldiers, first fighting proper, and they would be getting demobbed from me, and the young lads were being sent very early with one of them. A lot of them were, you know, lads who were maybe by this time only still 23, 24, were being sent to the first line, because they were going to the Far East. And then it eventually happened that they didn't go to the Far East. But nevertheless, it was a fact of life when we were doing that. And after that, the next thing was demob came on. And I was...
When were you demobilised?
February, end of January, beginning of February, that would be 46.
And what was the procedure when you were demobilised?
Well, of course, we were put into the various groups. We always thought that we were hardly dealt with because we were called up the week before the war. But because we were so young, and because of the methods that they devised to demob the British Army, we thought we were left out. Because I ended up in a group which got out so many months, well, we were talking more, not near 9 months after the end of the war, simply because I was so young when the war started. I forget the number of the group, but it certainly wasn't in the first 15, 16 years as well. So that's when my group was demobbed then, and I left the... Because you realise I haven't mentioned it, but we were having demob parties in the sergeant's mess, because not only was I demobbing the second line who'd been there all the time, I was now demobbing the first line who were coming to me simply to be demobbed. And we were making up lists and sending them off all the, and kept us fairly busy. And I think I must mention now, which affects the whole thing, the sergeant major of HQ squadron has never been mentioned up now. His name was McLaughlin. I don't know when he joined us, but he joined us, I don't remember if it was Jeremy Jones, they know me. But one of his jobs, which I always thought was a terrible job, all through the drive up to Normandy, was to replace the knocked out personnel in the tanks. And what happened was they came back to Echelon, if it was a gunner or an operator or a tank commander, not officers, I'm talking about other ranks. They came back to us and we kitted them up again. And Sandy Raven McLaughlin then had this job of sorting them out into drivers, second drivers, operators, gunners, and crew commanders. And he had the job of putting them into fives again and sending them back in tanks back to whoever was needed.
And this was this the company sergeant major?
Yes.
On the headquarters company sergeant major, not the RSM?
No, not the RSM, and he was squadron.
Squadron company sergeant, squadron sergeant major. Yeah.
Squadron sergeant major McLaughlin, and he didn't like this job, but this was one of his jobs daily, all the way up, all the fighting. He supplied that the personnel that went back up the tanks. We were also getting reinforcements coming up as well, new ones coming up, but he had to deploy back the ones in that job. It was a job which happened night after night.
Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, you had a 19 set in your truck, didn't you? Because you were never mentioned. Can you tell me a bit about this?
Yes, well, having the type of training I had been trained in, seriously trained in map reading, I was equipped with a complete set of maps, always. No officer had a better set of maps than I had. And I could trace centre lines, the brigade centre line, the squadron centre line. I knew which the squadron was either following up the brigade centre line or out on its own on the right flank, left flank, and I knew where they were at all times.
Now, you haven't mentioned the radio yet. If you
well, the radio then, I decided then, things were lying around, so I decided to equip myself with a radio. And the 19 set was available, I got the 19 set, and the joiner, I had a joiner, a chap called McNichol, he's on that list, but he's dead now. The joiner, there was another man that was in my team, by the way, I told you about the cobbler, or about that, I had a joiner. A very valuable man he was. So he equipped up my tank with a proper bench and a bench.
A truck, not tank.
My truck, 1500 it was. Sam was the driver, and he fitted up the 19 set, and I used to net in and listen to the actions that was going on and things that were happening. This gave me some idea of which squadron was doing most of the fighting, and I was, you know, just ahead and liked to be involved. I loved it.
And so that explains some of the things you've been saying about knowing what was going on.
Why I went up to ahead, I would say to Major Grant, I mean, he didn't ask me, but I have to say the truth, but I would say to Major Grant, I'll never weigh up the road now and see where we're crossing the Seine at Berlin. I'll have a good look around. So when we arrive as an echelon, I'll be with you. I'll be leading the echelon, and you'll not get lost, and we'll get on the right road, and we'll do everything right. And he didn't disagree with that. It was a system that worked.
Now, back to your demobilisation, what do you remember of the procedure?
Well, I don't remember a lot about it, truly. I remember arriving in Edinburgh, the barracks in Edinburgh, and that's where I got the suit and hat and shoes and everything else. And from then on, I was a civilian going back to Dundee, which wasn't very far.
Now, did you have any trouble getting back into civilian life? I suspect not, because I know you went back to your old firm for what you said.
This is it, you see. We had lots of funny things. We had lots of officers, Major Grant, and we had Bruce, who was with the Briggs, the director of Briggs Oils. He offered me a job. He said, "You know, Wilmer, when you go back, he says, come to me. I want you. You can come into Briggs, and I'll fix you up." I realise now that if I'd gone back to Briggs, I would have got a senior job with him because he knew all about me. You see, and I said, "No, I'm not going back to Briggs. I'll not take it." I said, I'm going back to where I was, because all during the war, my company had been giving, they didn't pay us, of course, during the war. Some companies paid them, but ours didn't. But they had been allocating me certificates, savings certificates. You know, the directors of the company had been allocating savings certificates, which my mother bought, and saved up, and saved up, and saved up. And I felt, I'd been there since I was 12 years old, remember, when you went into my background. I thought, oh, no, I'll go back to Lawson's and see what happens from there. So that was it. And I just simply went back, didn't bother about much holidays, simply went back into the shop and told them I was available for duty. They had no choice, by the way, they had to take us back. That was part of the overall plan, and there it was. I had been, of course, they knew I'd had a fairly good career. They knew twice that I'd been recommended for auction, because in both cases I remember I had to get letters from them at the time and whatnot. The managing director's son was in the Royal Albert Corps, and we never ever bumped up. So I was fairly well in with the business. It was a family business. So I went back and they said to me, well, you come back, we need to work out a wage structure, because I'd been on quite a small wage when I left. And now that I was a warrant officer, I had a fairly good wage. I mean, even in the field, I had a field allowance, which always struck me as very funny, but I had a field allowance on top of the rail. So there it was. So we decided you would give me this, they worked it all out. I didn't pay much attention, because I wasn't hard up, as you can well imagine. I mean, I hadn't been drawing wages for it. As a quartermaster, wages were irrelevant. I didn't need wages. Anything I needed was available, you see. So I was quite comfortable, but I wanted to go back into some sort. So I went back there, and I went back to work in Lawson's. Not very long, I'm not going on to that now, but very long after that.
You had a career there, that's where you...
I had a career there. They said, you've done so well, they've done this. You'd be more suited on our outside staff, the travellers. You see, and had to go around and build up districts, do this, do that. So I went back and built a career for me. When the business went on and on until it was sold. He hadn't told you this, but Lawson's went on until it was sold. United Directory Stores bought it. UDS, a very big company, bought it. And by that time I was on a management training, again on courses, management training with Lawson's. Because up to then, only the family got the jobs, you see. But then they decided to use me, and I was on management training, and I was doing this, and they were eventually getting a branch of my own. But UDS bought it, and that was a real blow to the troops, because the family had sold it for £3 million. And UDS bought it, and they came up to see what I could do. They interviewed me and said, don't worry, Robert, we like what we see, we'll give you a branch of your own. You won't have to wait for it, you get it next week. So they gave me a branch in the West Coast, my wife and I had to move, I got a branch of my own. Eventually the family disappeared, they brought me back to head office in Dundee, and under Dundee one. Then they sold out and Hanson Trust bought it over. Lord Hanson came into the scene, and I met Lord Hanson, and he came in, and another group of great wise people came in. My commanding, my managing director was a chartered accountant, just amazing man. Sneddon was his name, but I became his sort of, he's learning to me. By this time, I was area controller and running out. I run practically the whole country. We'd still got shops in England, but we sold it off. Once United Directory Stores bought us, we sold off the English branch to another English branch, and the Hanson Trust brought us over, and they were good, and I got on well with them as well. Eventually, I changed over to Hanson Trust, and I got into the Hanson Trust pension, and I had another pension we lost as well. So all things went well, but eventually I stayed with Hanson Trust right on until they sold out to, they bust it up, they sold the whole thing out. But I'm still a Hanson Trust man now after a few years. Yeah. And I was 53 years with Lawson's. I started when I was 12, and I retired from Lawson's when I was 65. But I didn't really retire because it was Hanson's then. They kept me working 3 days a week, and then they kept me till I was 70, and I retired at 70.
Now, what about your enduring contacts with the Fife and Forfar? Because you fought, they formed a regimental association. Yes, can you talk about that?
That's a good thing. When we came back in February, I came back in February, and not many had been to mob before me, but they started being to mob quickly, and they were all coming back. And there was a chap who was in the first division of offer. He was a captain, and he was called Robertson, and he was with the savings bank, a manager of the savings bank. So he says, there are people who wanted to contact us, Tom, so I made a meeting up. Now, three businessmen in Dundee, three great businessmen who were in the first line in the First World War, they got us together, and they said, what you want to do, chaps, form an association now, right now, get it organised, because the longer you wait, the harder it will be. So these two people, a chap called Mr. Peebles, who had a grocery shop, a chap called Kidd, who had a printer's business, and a man called Strachan, who had a great big clothing business. They three got us hooked into it. So we formed a committee, and we had our first dinner in April 1965. We had the first dinner organised and in place, and I was on the committee this time. And we worked at it, and that was our very first dinner in 1945.
46. Yeah, you said 65 before, but you mean 46.
46. And we had it in 46 in Gray's Rooms. And the regiment came, and we had a super dinner. And we had all sorts of things made for it. It was a really good dinner, and we have special things. I've still got them. But lovely things. And that was it, and that was us forum. And so we decided that it was important to keep together. So we decided to have an annual dinner every year. And we've had one every single year in Dundee, up until including 1999. And we, at these times, when we started the first, we had a whole table with about 20 people in it, survivors of the First War, great people. And we had that table of the survivors of the First War, and then it depleted and depleted and depleted, and then we had less. Then we moved our place of venue into another place, and we had the dinners ever since. And it's been a great thing.
It's very important to you, obviously.
Oh, it's been invaluable. And then, of course, we had the blessing of senior officers and senior people in the area, like Colonel Sir John Gilmer, Colonel Sir William Walker, Major Nairn, Colonel Hutchison. All these people were big local people. And they had their, and they came on as well as chairman. Colonel Walker was chairman for years, and so and there it is. But of course, sadly now it's deteriorated down with losses. I'm now chairman of the association myself now. You see, Brian Thompson, Colonel Thompson, is chairman of the entire thing. And we do that. The Dundee has gone from strength to strength. The other ones have all amalgamated. The A squadron, B squadron, C squadron used to have individual dinners, but they've come together into a single dinner. I think the year 2000 will be Dundee's last individual dinner, and 2001 we'll have to move over here because there's nobody here left to run the dinners at all. And I'm assuming I'll be doing that myself. All being well. I don't expect to die, by the way. They say old sisters never die. But there it is. We've been very good for benevolence situation. We're very, very good. If I could mention one benevolent thing, last year we got from Stafford, we got a notice from a chap in Walsall, the name's irrelevant, this chap in Walsall, he was applying to Stafford for a grant to build a shower room. And Stafford interviewed him well, a very good interview, because I got all the papers then. They came here to Humanity House, and Joe Priest gave them to me, and I looked at them, and it was obviously he was wounded in a tank, and he told Safa he was wounded in a tank in the Ardennes. So I said to myself, he was wounded in a tank in the Ardennes, he was with the fighting former, because we were the only British tank regiment there. And so we squadron anyway, and we sent it down to England, and I got a chap who lives down the road from Walsall to go and pay him a courtesy visit. He was in a tank, he only joined us in when we were getting built up in Ypres for the Comets. He joined us there, poor soul, came with us to the Ardennes, poor soul, and was brewed up at Chapel Hill. He was still getting skin grafts, I may tell you, when he applied for his grant, still getting them yet. So I went to Colonel Thompson, who's very good, and we decided to send £300 down. And he got his £300 and he now has a shower. Now, things and things like that make the whole thing worthwhile. And we have grants every year, but they're becoming less. And that's the way we go. We like to think we can supply our grants without going to the staff, or we like to look after our own people by ourselves.
Thank you very much.